I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Sean Watson.
And I'm Nate Burgess.
And we are Commanderin. Thanks for listening, everybody. We focus on the topics the community wants to hear about and talk to interesting people along the way, but never, ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, and Hearthstone. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Reddit, and mtgcast.com by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast. This episode, we are continuing our Big Mana series. Big Mana!
Big Mana!
We are re-entering Big Mana's house.
Mm-hmm.
I can promise you a no Martin Lawrence guarantee.
This episode, we are continuing our Big Mana series. Now that everybody has some new Battle for Zendikar cards.
Yeah, we do.
Maybe some huge colorless Eldrazi. What kind of commander would we use to get those big guys on the field? Today, we focus... Yes, and I do not look forward to it. Today, we focus on Big Mana commanders who can cheat out huge creatures. Animar, Soul of Elements, Rakdos, Lord of Riots, and Mael, the Anima. But first, Nate, you have a correction to make, don't you?
Bow, 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 bow.
Corrections!
Don't!
We're just so sorry. Yeah, that'll do.
So, in this segment, we will discuss previous errors that we made. Last episode, we were talking about Endlist 1, and I mentioned Linvala as maybe shutting down Endlist 1's counters as it entered the battlefield, but Linvala does not affect enter the battlefield triggers at all. So, when you go back in time and listen to that conversation in our previous episode, if I say Linvala, I'm really saying Hushwing Griff. And I'll still be wrong, but that conversation might be more educational. Over to you, Sean.
Yeah, so the Hushwing Griff stops enter the battlefield triggers happening, and entering the battlefield in a board state, so I'm entering the battlefield with some counters on it, or, for example, a clone entering the battlefield as a copy of something, is not a trigger. It is just something that happens when the card is cast. So the keywords to note if something has a trigger on it is whenever, when, or if, I believe the three are.
Or
it's definitely
at.
Whenever and when. Or at, sorry, yeah.
So if it whenever, if, or at.
Yeah. If it doesn't say those on them, it is not a trigger. Therefore, it does not get stopped by Hushwing Griff, and especially doesn't get stopped by Linvala, which doesn't do that, does it, Nate? Nate.
Nope. Nope. Torpor Orb would also be applicable to the conversation, but would also be wrong.
It would. Mm-hmm. Nate, are you sorry?
What was that?
Apparently that's Nate's sorry sound.
That was like a whining puppy kind of noise.
Oh,
was that sufficient?
It sounded nothing like a whiny puppy.
It sounded like when you died in... What game was that? You got hit by something, Mario or something?
Wah, 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 wah.
Pac-Man.
That was it. It sounded like Pac-Man dying.
Well, that's also applicable, huh?
Yeah, there you go. Nate is a dead Pac-Man. Anyway, moving along. I'm sure there'll be another corrections and apologies section next week. Have fun spotting the mistakes, listeners.
It's anybody who understands triggered abilities knows what we just did.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you don't, do learn it because it will make your games better. So, guys, I'm particularly excited about talking about how we did at Battle for Zendikar pre-release.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Just for the record, a triggered ability uses when, whenever, or at, not if.
Excellent.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Carry on.
So,
chip.
Battle for Zendikar pre-release, chaps. How did we do? One of us did better than the other two, didn't they?
Yeah, you did.
Me?
Well, what happened?
So, cards I wanted from my pre-release were... the list was quite long, but the main ones I wanted... Sire of Stagnation. Didn't get a Sire of Stagnation, sadly. But I wanted an Ulamog. Check. I wanted a Void Winnower. Check. And I really wanted an Obnixilis. didn't get an Obnixilus reignited. Did get a foil Obnixilus reignited, though.
As one of the promos, right?
Oh, yeah, I got it as the time date-stamped promo. It was funny because listener Pete, who I went with, picked up my box before I opened it to do the sealed pool and went, we could just swap these around. It's like Schrodinger's cards, isn't it? And I said, give me my sodding box back. Grabbed it off him. Opened it up and went, oh, look, foil up next to this promo. Look at that. What did you get? And he got a foil Dust Stalker, which is not a great card. I was like, yeah, it looks like Schrodinger's on my side, doesn't it? So that was good fun. I ended up building out of my sealed pool a Simic deck with its intention of creating a load of Scions, using them as chump blockers and then ramping into some of the big Eldrazi that I pulled. It worked all right. I went 2-3, sadly. I punted on one of those games really hard because I fought the blue bounce spell that bounces a target creature and awakens a land was an instant. It is not an instant. No, read your cards. It is a sorcery. And I died because of that timing. I blew out because of it. Yeah, I always would have won that round. God damn it, I would have gone 3-2. But, you know, it was good fun. I'd like to thank everyone at Patriot Games in Leeds, England, for running an excellent evening. It was a midnight pre-release as well, so I was a little tired by the end of it.
I bet.
But it was good fun. I didn't play a single sort of RC opponent. Everyone was really nice and friendly, and nobody was like super hyper pumped, spiky competitive. It was good.
Excellent.
All right.
I'd like to visit that if I ever get up to England at some point.
Yeah, I'll take you over there. No problem. No problem at all. You will come to England.
Oh, yes, I will. So, Nate, how did you do?
I went to Gamescape in San Francisco, and I got a foil Prairie Stream, big art, in my first pack.
Very nice.
So you got the Expeditions version.
Oh, yeah. It's got big art.
God.
Yeah.
And it's foil and it's shiny. And for the sake of Phil's vicarious nerves, I now have it double-sleeved and stored safely.
That's great.
But, yeah. Among the rest of my rares, there was a completely different kind of synergy. I had drawn a Liberator. That's cool. Ghoul draws Overseer. Meh. I got a Smothering Abomination. I got a Brood Butcher. I got a foil-stamped Green Warden of Murasa and Ally Encampment. And my black and green piles were the thickest and had good support for the rares, so early signs said to go with Golgari Vampire Eldrazi. And I liked the sound of that, so that's what I did. And I finished 2-2.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Oh, and Blister Pods work very well with Smothering Abomination.
Oh, I used Blister Pod. It was excellent. I had 3 of them.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't played.
Oh, Phil.
Aw. Yeah.
Bless you.
I had a few other things to take care of that weekend, including traveling on behalf of work, which was rewarding in its own way. But on a plus side, I did go to a local store and managed to purchase 2 pre-release packs.
Oh, so you opened some boosters.
I did. I opened some boosters, and my best card was, The Path to Ruin? What is it
called? So you've opened them all already?
Yeah, why would
you? Yeah, because me and a Magic-playing friend, we're going to play against each other, and we're actually going to take those 2 decks, and we're going to play them against the challenge decks as well. But I don't even know what to make. I mean, I look at it, I've got light. In my set, I've got light Eldrazi support. I don't have any really good. I did get a sire, though.
Well, maybe you should put up the pools and have our listeners and us talk about what you both should make.
That is a good idea, sir. Then I guess we'll put those up and put it to a community vote, as it were. But I was genuinely disappointed. I opened it, and when my friend got to the last pack, I was like, please, just any mythic rare! Any mythic rare!
No.
None.
We know. No, I got
one of my best cards was the Dust Stalker, just to give you an idea.
God. Well, I got three mythic rares, so don't worry, Phil. One of us did quite well on the mythics.
Oh, well, yeah, that's very good. Ordinarily, I pull two mythic rares out of these things, but...
Nope.
If only it was a foil Ulamog.
If only. I would be posting it to you, Nate. I have a legal contract with you.
Yeah.
So... I mean, I know we're not a limited or draft podcast in any way, but how did it feel for you, Nate, the pack? I had a few feelings about it, or what I noticed from my pool. How was your draw? How did you feel it went as a format?
I think I was able to pull together a deck that I was happy with. I got killed by Quarantined Field multiple times, though. Like I had a bunch of great blockers, and then, hey, suddenly I have no blockers, and now I'm dead. Bam.
The star card for me was actually Breaker of Armies, because I had a From Beyond. I could go cheat for him, and he almost functioned like a sort of slow board wipe.
I had a Bane of Balagad. I had a Brain of Balagad.
Brain of Balagad. And,
yeah. And he did some work. I got some Eldrazi Devastators too, but they were kind of useless, actually.
Yeah, wow. I had one of them. It didn't do great. But what I found with my pool was I had a ton of Processor cards and I think two cards that had Ingest on them.
Yeah, I had... Well, all my rares were either Ally or... Golgari something, and I also had a Catacomb Sifter, and I had the Brood Monitor, which puts out three tokens, and I had a bunch of Blister Pods, and it worked pretty well, but the Quarantined Field shut me down.
Oh, I got a, is it From the Light, the thing that casts a sorcery or an instant from your deck with Converge on it? Even though I was in Simic, I didn't put it in the deck. I'm saying...
Huh.
I'd rather just
put an extra. You need more colors.
Well, yeah, it's like only thing I'm really going to pull out is Anticipate, and I've already got two Anticipates, so why bother?
Yeah, you really need, with Converge mechanics, you really need to be playing three or more colors.
Yeah, and I didn't go in black, so I had a Brood Overseer and some stuff. I had loads of things triggered and I gained life. Had no way of gaining life. I did get killed by someone who had Vampiric Rites and the Brood Overseer, and he took me down to two life and then sacked two of his creatures and deal me. It's like, oh my god. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that's a good card. Or those are good cards, I should say. The my promo, I looked it up while you were talking, is Ruinous Path. It's the new Hero's Downfall.
That's a good card.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm happy about that. That's probably my best card of the lot.
Is it as good as a foil date stamped Obnixilus?
No.
Is it as good as a Prairie Expedition? Prairie Fools Expedition?
No. That just goes to show where my card packs landed. They landed in a pile of poop.
Anyway, BFC, I intend to maybe do a little bit more drafting. This might even get me to play a little bit of Standard, you know. I've been enjoying the Eldrazi so much.
No. It genuinely won't. It genuinely won't. Because you have to purchase all of the Standard cards that are actually useful.
Yeah, but I'll Cha-ching. Buy one Standard deck. Probably net deck, a top 8 deck, just so I can go to FNMs and maybe win some stuff. And then never put any more money into it again until that deck rotates out.
Yeah.
So
that reminds me, how's your Modern Fairies deck doing?
Oh, it's awful. It's terrible, terrible. It's not won a game. The people I've played against, because I play online mostly, all seem to have one of 8 decks. That's all I ever see. I could name you the entire deck lists off the top of my head, and they all play the same decks. And unless you're playing in that pool, you're just going to get absolutely beaten senseless every game, and is a terrible format.
Yeah.
Standard isn't like that, though, I think. Standard has a lot more variants.
Well, yeah, because it changes every 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, and people are always... The meta on it shifts very quickly, so... I don't know, pick something. Mono Blue Devotion becomes popular, someone starts to build something that counteracts that. Abzan, Massive Life Gain, Pillow Fort becomes popular, someone builds a mill deck. You know, it's an interesting cycling meta. Yeah, I prefer Standard over anything other than Commander.
commander is where it's at.
Oh, yeah. That reminds me, there was a quiz before. Thank you to Patreon Games. There's a quiz before the pre-release, and my team won. And my prize was a foil FNM Path to Exile.
Oh, that's excellent.
A very nice card to be handed for free. So, yeah, game on.
That's very good.
Yeah, I was very happy with that.
All right. Well, speaking of Commander, perhaps we should get to our main topic.
Oh, yeah, we're a Commander podcast, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Hey, Nate. Nate, do you want to set this up?
All right. We are in the Big Mana series, and these are commanders who can cheat out huge, maybe colorless, don't have to be colorless, but they can cheat out huge creatures. And first up, we have Annamar, Soul of Elements.
Mm-hmm.
He costs a blue, a red, and a green. That's cheap. He's a 1/1. Legendary creature, Elemental. Protection from white and from black. Whenever you cast a creature spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Annamar, Soul of Elements, and creature spells you cast cost one colorless less to cast for each counter on Annamar. Next up, Rakdos, Lord of Riots. He's 2 black and 2 red. Legendary creature, Demon, 6/6. You can't cast Rakdos, Lord of Riots, unless an opponent lost life this turn. Hey, that's a restriction.
That's pretty difficult.
He's 6/6. He's got Flying and Trample. That's handy. And creature spells you cast cost one colorless less to cast for each one life your opponents have lost this turn. So, to avoid confusion with the other version of Rakdos, we will call this one O'Riots. After all, he is wearing a kilt.
Is he?
He is, isn't he? Is. Look at that.
He is definitely not based on Games Workshop's design for Bloodthirster of Khorne. Definitely not.
No, definitely
he looks
not.
Like a standard Tolkien Balrog.
Which was Games Workshop definitely didn't design their Bloodthirster of Khorne on.
And our third commander is Mael the Anima.
Ah, finally, some pleasant colors.
She's red, green, and white.
I don't understand. What?
Legendary creature, Elf Shaman.
How?
2/3.
How do I cast?
She has an ability.
Sorry.
It's 3 colorless, a red, a green, and a white. So that's 6 mana. And you tap her. And hey, you look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may put a creature card with power 5 or greater from among them onto the battlefield. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order.
How
That's
do you,
right.
How
big
do
fatties
you,
at instant speed.
Yeah. How do you cast this card, though? So I tap my island and my swamp and my watery grave, right? But I don't see how I'm getting her into play. Nope. I feel like a dog being shown a card trick. But, what?
Yeah, you need trees.
Well, there's hardly anything in common about them.
Well, they can all put big creatures out on the battlefield. And so, let's talk about some good cards for all three of these commanders. First up, many Eldrazi. They have high power, and they are colorless. So Annamar and Rakdos could potentially cast them for free.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we just discussed several new Eldrazi in our Battle for Zendikar episode, so go ahead and listen to that episode so that we don't rehash those here.
True. Rakdos is particularly nasty with the Eldrazi, because as soon as he hits a certain amount of damage in a turn, the player just, well, I suppose Annamar does as well, but they just dump their hand on you. Boom. There you go.
It really does. It gets brutal. I played against Nate, play tested against Nate a couple of times, and once he gets a couple of trampling creatures out, it just snowballs, and it becomes unstoppable.
Well, as long as Rakdos doesn't trample him,
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was the goal of my my playtest game against him, was to keep Rakdos from coming on being on the table and being able to hit me. Oh, it didn't work so well.
What happened the other night? Me, Nate, and Nick Jaragoski, sorry, friend of the show, Nick Jaragoski, were playing. Nate attacked into Nick with a very early game with, I think it was a solemn simulacrum or something. Just, you know, 2-2, nothing on him. Nick just had out a 1-1 mana dork. And I was like, you need to block that. He's like, oh yeah, ha ha ha. I thought I was joking. I was like, no, you need to block that. He said, no, I don't. Let the damage through. Nate's like, Rakdos, next turn, bam, here's a whole host of Eldrazi. He's like, so you needed to block that. Yeah, so he needed to block that, and he won't make that mistake again. Silly, silly Nick.
Yeah, Rakdos in particular, if someone overloads a Cyclonic Rift against you, you can put your entire hand back on the table next turn.
Well, I mean,
if you build it right.
If they time their Cyclonic Rift wrong, you can do it immediately, can't you? Because that that effect sort of timestamps for the turn isn't whilst Rakdos is in play.
Yeah, and if you have a Vedalken Orrery.
Orrery. Yeah, it's good.
If somebody else does damage to somebody else, kaboom.
Yeah, that's the worst part about Rakdos, is it's unless an opponent lost life this turn. Ugh. And so, yes, if you have some ability to flash him in, it gets brutal fast.
Yeah, I guess with Mael, I mean, it's not quite as explosive, and she doesn't cast the card. So a lot of the Eldrazi have cast triggers, which was R&D's way of just limiting them a little bit. To make them more on the side of reasonable rather than just, oh my god, my face! But,
yeah, so mainly so that you didn't flicker the Eldrazi to get that effect repeatedly.
Oh god, could you imagine? But, yeah. So Mael loses a little bit of that when using the Eldrazi, but there's still something to be said about instant speeding in. Let's pick an Eldrazi, which is in a deck all the time. Kozilek. I'm just going, yeah, next turn you've got a 10-10 or 11-11 Annihilator coming right at you.
Yeah, she's pretty brutal in the sense that she has consistency. So Mael will pretty steadily bring out one big fat creature every single turn. And you can usually time that so that it happens at the end of your last opponent's turn before your own. And because she, of course, is doing this at instant speed, she requires that you build her with at least 25 fairly big creatures, and every other creature in there is a utility of some kind. And so not as explosive as the others, but definitely a steady drumbeat of doom.
So Wormcoil Engine costs 6. Would you put that in Mael?
The clean version, yes.
The reprinted non-Phyrexian version?
Yes, the one that was in the Commander 2014 product, the red deck.
Whatever helps you sleep at night, Phil. Whatever helps you sleep at night.
I know, it's a very shiny Wormcoil Engine. We've been over all of this before. We don't need to bore our listeners.
All right.
So I would put Wormcoil in. The problem with Wormcoil is that it costs 6 mana, right? So you're not really getting a rebate with Mael. You're getting the surprise factor. And what I like about Mael, and this is where the red really comes in, is you can't predict what you're going to get. It's very difficult, I mean, to predict what you're going to get, right? Because if you don't have some way to control what's on the top of your deck, or to kind of winnow away the cards that aren't big creatures, then you're basically getting a random big fatty out of your deck. So everything has to be useful. Either it has to change the board state, or it has to have a wonderful enter the battlefield effect.
Yeah, so Senses Divining right. Top, Miri's Guile, they're your best friends in this deck, I presume.
Oh, I can get to those specific cards a little bit later.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch.
Hmm.
Phil, you want to read the next card?
Hamlet Back Goliath. That is a very fun card. For 6 and a red, you get a creature, giant warrior, a 6/6 creature, giant warrior. And as if that's not good enough, because it isn't. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield, and you have to remember, folks, this is whenever another creature enters the battlefield, because I missed that the first time. You may put X +1/+1 counters on Hamlet Back Goliath, where X is that creature's power. Wow. That is fantastic, because with one wheel, especially if you're playing against another big mono commander, with one wheel of the table, you might even have a 20-20 Hamlet-back Goliath that's just waiting for those Vorak battle horns to be strapped to it, or some other trample enabler like Nylea or Archetype of Aggression.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, he gets big fast.
Yeah, he does.
And he can go in Sean's bald person theme deck.
He can go.
That's true.
Bald person.
Possibly commanded by a child of Alara, who is also bald.
Well, yes, at the moment. Might get hair when it's older.
And, I saw this guy about a year ago, but I didn't really use him. And dug him back out after the Commander's Brew talked about the card, because it really is. It's a cheap, in terms of pound dollars, it's 34 cents, right? A cheap, big fatty, and it gets huge, and if you have some way to enable trample, it's going to do some damage.
It's a good card.
And in Animar and Rakdos, it's often you're just paying a single red to put him on the field.
Yeah, which is that's so cheaty.
Oh, yeah!
Animar and Mael have green access, as you noted, Nate. Elemental Bond, one of my favorite cards from Origins, really pays off when you're cheating these big cards into play, big creatures into play. And Lurking Creditors.
your Visa card is calling, Phil.
Something on your mind, Phil. Who's the company? Credit card company's been knocking on the door.
And Lurking Predators gives you free top deck creatures. I've included this in a couple of decks, but I still haven't managed to cast it. Lurking Predators, of course, is 4 and green for an enchantment. Whenever an opponent casts a spell, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a creature card, put it onto the battlefield. Otherwise, you may put that card on the bottom of your library. So, hello.
Kaboom.
That's a really, really quite amazing card.
It really is. I anticipate its swift destruction once I finally manage to get it into play.
Yeah, I've seen one of them get out of hand in a Crush the Blood Braided deck, actually. It was not insignificant.
Was it Thax?
It was Thax Crush deck, yeah. You just had to deal with that, and, you know, powerful enchantments is not something I deal with very well. So I was begging people to stop it happening, and they said, no, 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 enjoying me suffering. And then I was like, okay, do you know what? That's fine. You'll see why you need to deal with it. Go, Fak. Go. Have fun. I'm not even going to try and use my blue control strategies. Knock yourself out.
It's educational.
Edutainment for the masses.
So what kind of cards would you play with Animar? I don't play Animar, even though I have two Spanish-speaking ones. But I don't play Animar yet.
Señor Animar.
That was French.
That's Spanish.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Animar.
There you go.
I am protection from black and from white. I shouldn't do accents. So, Animar.
Cards specifically for Animar. Some strategies you want to put counters on Animar. So, I think we've talked about Hardened Scales. We've talked about Doubling Season for sure. We've talked about Primal Vigor, but that's not a great one. Orin Reef the Vastwood, we talked about that in our Value Green.
Yeah, that's good.
Now, there's an ability in green or blue called Graft. And an example is a land called Llanowar Reborn. It enters the battlefield tapped, and if you tap it, you can add green to your mana pool, and it has Graft 1. This land enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield, you may move a +1/+1 counter from this land onto it.
So a very good card that I run in +1/+1 counter decks, which seems to get no play, but has been extremely effective when I've had it out, is Death's Presence, which is a green enchantment for 5 and a green. Whenever a creature you control dies, you may put +1/+1 counters onto another creature you control, where X was the dead creature's power, which kind of gives all your stuff a grafting death trigger. Now, I replaced all my decks that run Primal Vigor with Death's Presence, and it's very effective.
Yeah, that's like a backup Kresh.
Yeah, it makes all your creatures Kresh, kind of. That's in green, and you can just dump stuff on. He's like, you can kill my things, but I'm going to dump it onto Animar.
Yeah, so there are some other creatures in green and blue that have the graft ability. Some of them start with a bunch of counters, and you can just parcel them out as you need. I've found that colorless mana dorks are useful, like Iron Mirror, Copper Mirror, and Silver Mirror. They cost two colorless each, and you can tap them for a colored mana of red or green or blue.
Yeah, I hate it on those turns when you just dump them onto the table. And so the next turn you'll be ramping 1 to 3 mana and you didn't pay anything for them. You're breaking a fundamental aspect of the game, Nate.
Yeah, Nate.
What, paying mana for things?
Yeah, Nate.
Well, that's how big mana works.
Yeah, it is. I just hate that you're so good at it.
Well, I'm learning.
By the way, Death's Presence, even though it's more expensive in terms of mana, it's only an 18-cent card. So it's a pretty good budget replacement for Primal Vigor.
I think just better than Primal Vigor. Because it's not linear.
Yeah, well, it's not symmetrical, you mean.
Symmetrical, sorry, yes. Sorry, got my wording wrong. It's not symmetrical. I think it's just better.
Yeah, I hate symmetrical effects, or rather, I really kind of try to avoid them. And Death's Presence is better in my book than Primal Vigor. But Primal Vigor, just to show you how powerful that effect is, that's a $7 card.
Yeah.
Doubling Season is $30, right? So...
Dull.
As long as, talking about Animar, as long as they didn't recently print a common card that allows Animar to go infinite, that's we'll be all right.
Yeah, if you're the type of person who likes to go infinite in various ways, and your meta has no limits on such behavior, there's a card called Ancestral Statue. It costs 4 colorless. It's an artifact creature, golem, whatever, 3/4. When Ancestral Statue enters the battlefield, so it's on the battlefield, return a non-land permanent you control to its owner's hand, such as Ancestral Statue.
It's so broken.
So once Animar has 4 counters, then...
3.
Animar has
3 counters, because when you cast him, it puts the 4th counter on him.
Good catch. So once Animar has 3 counters, Animar has infinite counters by casting and bouncing Ancestral Statue infinite times.
And even if, like us, you only limit that to 3 or 5 times,
five we do in my paper.
Animar still has 12 counters on it by the end of that cycle.
Yeah, so you put Ancestral Statue in 5 times, and then normally you can dump the rest of your hand in at that point as well. So... Even with the 5 bounce limit.
And if you have a Purphoros or Impact Tremors on the field, otherwise you dump all your Eldrazi in your hand on the table and make a XX Hydra or an Endless One for outrageous values of X, or just swing Animar in for 1,000,000 commander damage.
Do you run this in your Animar deck? Do you run Ancestral Statue?
Yeah,
of course he does. Look at the monster we've created, Phil.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I blame you for birthing him and me for molding him. And then he took on a life of his own. And he's like the Sith. He's killing his masters.
So there's some other bouncing creatures, Shrieking Drake, which cost just a single blue. And it's a 1/1.
I was playing with Shrieking Drake the other day and locking out these 2 chumps I was playing. We've Shrieking Drake in an equilibrium. Who was that I was playing? And I kept bouncing all their creatures and keeping them locked out. Oh, it was you two, wasn't it? I remember now. Yeah, I remember.
Surely you won that game, right?
I think I lost that game.
Yeah, you did.
Look. My hubris doesn't have a long memory, so shush. See, even the rabbits agree.
Mm-hmm. And Shrieking Drake is a 25-cent card, and when Shrieking Drake comes into play, return a creature you control to owner's hand. Bounce, 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 bounce.
Yes, for a blue on this instance. Cloudstone Curio is the other, another card Nate's got listed here, which is when I briefly had an Animar deck before I rebuilt it, but built it back to Maelstrom Wanderer. Cloudstone Curio, slightly more expensive card, $6, but it's 3 mana for an artifact. Oh, has it gone up?
It was $6 some time ago, and as of August 18th, it shot up to $21.
Jeez Louise!
What? Median, it shot up to $15, and right now it's merely a $13.89 card.
I mean, I paid about £5 for mine, which is $7.50, something like that. But blimey, that is a big increase. So I'll read it if you've got the cash or happen to have one laying around. Whenever a non-artifact permanent comes into play under your control, may return another permanent you control that shares a permanent type with it to its owner's hand. So that's, I play one creature, return another creature, I play one creature, return another creature. And obviously with enough tokens on Animar, that goes infinite immediately.
So you're just juggling with two creatures.
Yeah. The another good one for this, and something that we've not really spoken about yet, is it plays really well with morph creatures. So any morph creatures come in. in fact, Animar as a commander plays really well with morph. If you ever wanted to do a morph theme deck or a mega morph theme deck, this card's a key one in it, and Animar is the best commander you can have for it. So you just juggle two morph creatures, brum, and it's very effective. Nate, you missed Crystal Shard on the bounces, which is a staple blue bounce artifact.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you know blue better than I do.
Oh, well, thank you. You flatter me, sir. it's an artifact for 3 mana. You can pay 3 and tap it to bounce a creature, so return target creature to its owner's hand. Or you could pay 1 blue and tap it to return target creature to its owner's hand. So it's a Shrieking Drake on an artifact. But obviously you can only do it once because it taps. But it's good for saving your stuff if board wipes go out. Very, very good.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's pennies, absolute pennies to buy a Crystal Shard. Unless
under a dollar.
Phil's about to tell me it's gone to $52.
No, it's under a dollar.
Yeah, so that's a good
one. All right.
Very good one.
So in the next category, we have creatures who tutor other creatures. Now, this first one, I'm not recommending you actually buy it because it was printed in a weird set.
Portal.
And yeah, this is about a $200 at least card. Imperial Recruiter, 2 and a red. Creature, probably human advisor, 1/1. When Imperial Recruiter comes into play, search your library for a creature card with power no greater than 2. Reveal that card and put it into your hand, shuffle your library.
Blimey, Charlie. $200.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's for the Judge Foil. The actual Portal 3 Kingdoms uncommon version is $260.91 minimum.
Yeah.
God, so do you two know why Portal 3 Kingdoms cards are so expensive?
Because they released like 3 packs of them.
Yeah, they were only printed to recruit into the the Australasia and Southeast Asia market. So they were only ever printed in English in Australia and New Zealand. And then you can get, I think, Japanese and Chinese versions were released over a few areas of Southeast Asia. And obviously Japan's not Southeast Asia, but you know. So the packs are rarer than Rocking Horse poop, and just is Imperial Seal, is that like an $800 not very good version of Vampiric Tutor?
It is.
Yeah. So if you've got money to buy Portal 3 Kingdoms cards, go for it, but blimey.
And so for the price of a single Imperial Recruiter, you could have 400 or 500 of the next card. Fierce Empath, which is 2 and a green. Creature Elf, 1/1. When Fierce Empath enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost 6 or greater. Reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. Ba-doom.
Awesome, and the important thing to note is you're going to be bouncing your Fierce Empath, probably.
Yes, you are.
So, Yeah, an already good card becomes a phenomenal card in this deck. Yeah.
All right.
If, by the way, the Commander in Podcast does not recommend you buy 450 Fierce Empaths. We do not recommend that.
Unless you're Jason Ault, maybe. I don't know. Maybe he's not going to take our advice. He'll just decide to do it on his own.
You could only get about 250 at today's prices for Fierce Empath.
Only 250.
Yeah.
Wow, wow, wow.
I mean, I've got one, maybe two.
Mm.
So I think we've spoken about Animar enough for now. Let's move on to the big kilt-wearing demon daddy himself, Rakdos.
All right.
Lord of Riot. Lord of Riots! Oh, he's such a riot.
So some good cards that I found for Mr. O'Riots. And here's in the damage everyone category.
Uh-huh.
Here's a creature called Plague Spitter. 2 and a black. Creature horror. 2/2. At the beginning of your upkeep, Plague Spitter deals 1 damage to each creature and each player.
Nice.
Boink, boink, boink. When Plague Spitter is put into a graveyard from play, Plague Spitter deals 1 damage to each creature and each player. Boink, boink, boink.
Yep. Solid. No one can complain about that.
Yeah, it's a great card.
If I'm in a 4-player game, that's 3 damage before I've drawn a card.
That's 4 damage in a 4-player game and 5 damage in a 5-player game. It keeps going as well.
Oh, well, yeah, but I'm only counting my opponent's damage for the Rakdos.
Oh, of course, yeah. I forgot. It's not just damage his opponents. What about... what's the classic enchantment that was printed in Alpha which needs to go in every Rakdos deck?
Oh, you thinking Pestilence?
I am thinking Pestilence, which is...
Da-na-na.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. 2 and 2 black for black enchantment. Pay 1 black. Deal 1 damage to each player and each creature. If in the end step there are no creatures in play, destroy Pestilence. That could do some horrific things in Rakdos.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great card.
What about Mana Barbs?
Oh, Mana Barbs.
That's the one I thought you were going for, right? Mana Barbs is 3 and a red. And the Alpha Edition wording is, whenever any land is tapped, Mana Barbs does 1 damage to the land's controller. Obviously, the Oracle text has changed a little bit, but we know what that means.
Rakdos would need the Vedalken Orrery to take advantage of that.
That's right,
other
yeah.
players' turns.
Yeah, I think with the Pestilence, you're more in control of it, aren't you? Well, you're entirely in control of it, as opposed to Mana Barbs, we are not.
Absolutely.
But it's a bit of an attrition deck, Rakdos, isn't it? You're going to try and drive people to really have to think about their choices, or you're going to take their life totals low fast. Why haven't I built a Rakdos deck? Nate, why haven't I built...
Because I made one first.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
there's no blue in it.
There's black in it, though.
So a couple of other creatures that have some things in common. Lobber Crew, 2 and a red, creature goblin warrior, 0/4. He's a defender, and if you tap him, he deals 1 damage to each opponent, and whenever you cast a multicolored spell, untap Lobber Crew. Next up, there's a creature that just came out, Nettle Drone, also 2 and a red. He's a 3/1, he's devoid, he has no color, he's a creature Eldrazi Drone, and you can also tap him to deal 1 damage to each opponent, and whenever you cast a colorless spell, untap Nettle Drone.
The next few months are going to suck, aren't they?
No, I'm looking forward to it. They might suck for you. Hang on, you play green, you must love big beasties.
Well, yeah, there's a certain appeal to Mael for me, but playing against when he had Lord of Riots out, and the first card he cast in that game, in the game I'm thinking of, was Lobber Crew, and now he's got 2 of them basically, and it's just, I'm not looking forward to this.
Lobber Crew.
And Sean,
yes,
you were talking about Elish Norn and the muscle and bone red and white theme
of
the artwork.
Yeah, the Eldrazi are copying the Perfection of Phyrexia, yes.
Well, no, I think Ulamog's Brood in particular, it's copying the red, white, and blue of America.
Yes.
The ultimate consumers. You look at Nettle Drone, there's red, white, and blue. He's stretching out patriotically and showering everything with spines, but he's got heart.
I suppose you've got a point, because when America goes into a new country and leaves, it does leave nothing in its wake apart from a calcium-rich, dusty wasteland of which no life can grow.
And people squabbling over what few resources remain.
Yep. Politics!
Next up,
England have never done anything bad in war ever in our entire history. Sorry, India. We're really sorry. Like, we'll send you...
Sure you are. You're drinking all their tea.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I've just seen two words I never expected to ever see written down in a legitimate context. Douthy tribal.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. So the Douthi, they're some cheap creatures. They're old school. They're in black. They're mostly two or three converted manikos, and they all have something to do with shadow, which is basically makes them unblockable, which makes Quietus Spike more appealing.
Quietus Spike doesn't trigger your damage for Rakdos, though, does it?
Rakdos is looking for players who have lost life.
Oh, is it? Right. Damage. Oh, God. Okay, it does. There you go. I apologize. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and the Quietus Spike is sort of overkill.
Yeah.
But,
and it draws a lot of hate when it gets on the board.
Oh, yeah, I just put Quietus Spike into my Veil of the Nightcloud unblockable deck, actually.
Yeah, if you have an unblockable deck, it probably goes in there.
So would you run Master of Cruelties in Rakdos?
I would need other ways to make him unblockable.
Yeah. And he has to attack alone.
He only needs to attack alone once.
Like if I have a deck that already has Artful Dodge in it or something.
Probably not going to have Artful Dodge in a Rakdos deck.
Yeah, it would have to be something Grixis.
Rogue's Passage?
Well, sure, but you don't see the Rogue's Passage and the Master of Cruelties together in the same game often enough. You need more redundant, unblockable effects.
Yeah, I don't think in a Rakdos deck you're going to see a lot of Master of Cruelties just because you're trying to put as much damage on as possible. And that would help, but then you have to put a lot of unblockable support in there, and that just isn't... It runs counter to the Rakdos strategy.
So why run Quietus Spike then?
Death Touch.
Yeah,
because you have the Douthi Tribal.
Oh, I suppose. Yeah. I think I'm with Phil. I think it's overkill.
Quietus Spike, yeah.
Going to draw too much hate onto yourself to make it worthwhile.
That's probably true. So, as an alternative, with the new Battle for Zendikar cards, I have been trying out Black-Red Allies as a possibly faster replacement for the Douthi subtribe. So some cards are Calastria Healer, which is one and a black, Creature Vampire Cleric Ally 1/2, Rally, whenever Calastria Healer or another ally enters the battlefield under your control, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life.
Yeah, very nice.
So against three opponents, that's three life just by casting that, which makes the next card just cost a single red. It's Tuk Tuk Scrapper, which is three and a red. Creature Goblin Artificer Ally, 2/2. Whenever Tuk Tuk Scrapper or another ally enters the battlefield under your control, you may destroy target artifact. If that artifact is put into a graveyard this way, Tuk Tuk Scrapper deals damage to that artifact's controller equal to the number of allies you control. So he comes in, Calastria Healer triggers again, you get three more points, and Tuk Tuk Scrapper hits for two more points, which lets you cast Hagra Diabolus for four and a black, but you get four off. Creature, Ogre Shaman Ally, 3/2. Whenever Hagra Diabolus or another ally enters the battlefield under your control, you may have target player lose life equal to the number of allies you control. So that would trigger the Calastria Healer again, that would trigger the Tuk Tuk Scrapper again, and somebody loses three life. And then I'll cast Azulaport Cutthroat for one and a black. Human Rogue Ally, 1/1. He's a new one. Whenever Zalaport Cutthroat or another creature you control dies, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life.
Nice.
Ta-da!
That's the new weakened version of Drain on Azulaport Cutthroat. I mean, it's that all the effects that used to say each opponent loses X life and you gain that amount of life all now have changed, so you just gain one chunk of life.
That's probably okay.
Yeah.
He definitely goes in my Shadowborn Apostles, though.
Yeah, one more point about the Quietus spike. The reason I said the Death Touch, and it's better in this sense than Master of Cruelties, is because if Master of Cruelties is blocked, it does not do damage to the player behind the creature that's about to die, right?
Correct.
Whereas with Quietus spike on a trampling creature, Quietus spike deals 1 point of damage to that creature, kills it, and the rest of the damage spills over. And so that plays into the Rakdos Lord of Riots. Any kind of death touch that can be strapped onto a creature with trample just has amazing benefits in the Rakdos Lord of Riots. Quietus spike, of course, not only has the trample damage that overflows, but then because it does half the opponent's life total.
Yeah, round it down.
Round it up.
Was it round
then?
Right.
Then
even better.
That just means that, you know, there's an amazing amount of synergy with Quietus spike. Now, of course, it does draw a bunch of hate, but it's much better in a Rakdos deck than the Master of Cruelties.
Yeah, I'd probably run both. The Master fits in. I mean,
the Master's good for flavor, but I actually took him out.
Yeah.
Okay. Is talking about Tuk Tuk Scrapper briefly. Is Tuk Tuk Scrapper the same Tuk Tuk that is Tuk Tuk the Explorer?
Because
one of them's legendary and one of them's not.
I think, isn't Tuk Tuk a band or something? A band of goblins?
Yeah, it's cool. I'd never seen that card before until Nate played it against me the other night. I like it when that happens. When I say, hey, that's new.
Me too.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't like what he was doing with it. But...
No, nor should you. It was probably brutal.
Well, yeah, he went after my artifacts, which was mean. Although he mostly went after Nick's artifacts. So, yeah, Zulaport Cutthroat's a nice new card, and uncommon as well in a current new set, so it'd be cost nothing.
Yeah, and there are a few more red allies with a rally ability that give all of your creatures some kind of combat bonus for a turn, and I'll just read them off. Chasm Guide gives everyone haste. Andu Champion gives everyone trample. Highland Berserker gives everyone first strike. And Fire Mantle Mage gives everyone menace.
Very cool.
I don't think I've seen... I somehow skipped over Fire Mantle Mage during the BFC preview season here. That's pretty good.
Yeah, menace, I think we're going to... Well, obviously we're going to see more of it because they've newly keyworded an old ability, but...
It's a word now.
I think it's underrated. I really do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. What else do we see in Rakdos?
If you like Tuk Tuk Scrapper, check out Viashino Heretic, which is 2 and a red. Summon Viashino, 1/3. And if you tap him for 1 and a red, destroy target artifact. Viashino Heretic deals to that artifact's controller damage equal to the artifact's total casting cost.
Yeah, but you'd have to play a Slea Stack.
A Slea Stack?
I don't know what a Slea Stack is.
You guys don't know what a Slea Stack is?
No.
Oh my god. Never mind. Move along.
All right, I'll look that up later. Next up, cheap burns that hit all opponents, such as Sizzle for 2 and a red. Sorcery, Sizzle deals 3 damage to each opponent. And if you have 3 opponents, that's a free Void Winnower. Kaboom. If you have any kind of big burn, such as Price of Progress or Acidic Soil or something like that, you can follow it up with an Endless One.
Yeah, very nice. I actually got the Void Winnower out the other day, didn't I, Nate? It was lovely. He's so good. So, so good.
This next category are cards that I really like because they give opponents terrible choices. First card, Temporal Extortion. It costs black, 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 black. Sorcery. When you play Temporal Extortion, any player may pay half his or her life. Round it up. If a player does, counter Temporal Extortion. If they don't, take an extra turn after this one.
I'm letting you take that extra turn just for the future record.
Yeah, I think I have to ask each player in play order, hey, would you like to lose half your life?
Yeah, you go priority to the left.
Okay. How about you? How about... Okay, I guess I'm taking the next... No?
Technically, okay. Nate, you have to ask yourself, because it says any player, would you like to
count your own score? I'm not going to count that, no.
Oh, look at that casting cost, though. Ow.
Yeah, it's tough, but Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth helps.
Yeah. Four black, listeners, four black.
Right. Take the extra turn, Nate. Take the extra turn.
Yep. Well, will I lose more life by being hit by his giant horde of creatures than I will by not letting him take the extra turn?
Next up, Indulgent Tormentor.
Now that's a card.
3BB. Creature demon, 5/3 flying. At the beginning of your upkeep, draw a card unless target opponent sacrifices a creature or pays 3 life.
Mm-hmm.
So this might be better in Oriots than Bloodgift Demon.
Yeah. Yeah, I play Indulgent Tormentor in other decks, and in Oriots, it's just... the synergy is incredible.
Bloodgift Demon, though, is target player pays to lose a life and draws a card, so you can still, if you're desperate, get Rakdos out with Bloodgift.
Yeah, but I still want the cards and them to take the damage.
The problem I find with Tormentor is over Bloodgift is if you ever ask me, I'm letting you have that card. Unless, you know.
All right, then.
But then with Bloodgift, you know, you've got the choice of whether you want the damage or the card. Now, I know you're giving your opponent a card, but presumably you're going to do something horrific with the damage, so it's not going to matter too much.
Well, Bloodgift automatically guarantees that he can cast Oriots.
Yes, that's my point.
Yeah.
I'm saying Bloodgift I'd still choose over this, because if he ever asks me, I will always let him take that card rather than let him cast his commander, whereas he has control over that decision. Like, I'm going to quote Jimmy Wong here. I'm not a fan of a card, of any card that gives my opponent decision over what allows me to do. Like, the voting cards.
But if both choices are terrible, then there's pleasure in that.
Letting you draw a card isn't always a terrible choice, though. Like,
okay, would you let me draw 3 cards? For example, if I played Browbeat for 2 and a red, sorcery, any player may have Browbeat deal 5 damage to him or her. If no one does, target player, that would be me, draws 3 cards.
That's a more legitimate choice. Like, 3 cards is vastly more significant than 1. Especially in red-black, I suppose black you can draw cards all the time. But, that's a really good card for red. Red sorcery.
Oh, yeah. It also has Tybalt on it.
Oh, yeah, it does. Look at him.
Looking at the art.
I'm on a giant Tybalt. I want a useful card. What? Quick, call my mom. Tell her a little boy's done something good. I think.
You want to read the flavor text?
Yeah. Pay defiance or shameful surrender. Every reaction is a pleasant surprise.
Oh, boop.
Self. Sorry, I added a bit on the end there. So, yeah. I don't know. I think the Bloodgift gives you control. Giving your opponent control. Maybe this is the blue in me saying, no, don't give your opponent things. Choices over you, because one is a choice where you have the choice and the other is one where your opponent has a choice.
But this makes the deck more interactive by giving the opponents terrible choices and then you watch them squirm.
Commander is a solo player game. No, I'm joking. Suppose, what about Painful Quandary? Have you got that on this list?
I love that card.
Painful Quandary should absolutely be on this list. I mean, it's even called Painful Quandary. It does exactly what it says on the tin.
Whenever an opponent casts a spell, that player loses 5 life unless he or she discards a card. And it's an enchantment that costs 3BB.
I have that in other decks, but not Rakdos, because it would depend on Vidalcan Orrery.
Yeah, true. So note to self, if you're using Rakdos and Vidalcan Orrery comes down, burn it with fire.
Yeah, this is worth playing even without, though.
Yeah, I think so too. Especially if you enjoy, as you say, enjoy watching your opponent squirm over decisions, because it means people can't react in your turn.
Yeah, I have a Shattergang Brothers deck full of stuff that whenever an opponent does anything, something awesome happens.
Opponent takes a sip of his soda, loses a life. Opponent looks at me across the game table. That's two life.
Yeah. Managorge or Hydra, Taurian Mauler, Painful Quandary, Polluted Bonds. That's great. Aether Sting. Oh, I could go on.
Yeah. All right, so we're down to Mael and good cards with her.
Yeah, we are.
So Commander's Brew did an episode on Possibility Storm using featuring Mael because she doesn't actually cast the creatures, right? She cheats them into play. And Possibility Storm, again, is a red enchantment that's three and red. Whenever a player casts a spell from his or her hand, that player exiles it, then exiles a card from the top. Basically, you go fishing for another card of the same type that you just cast and then put it into play instead of the one that you cast. That's pretty fun. It's kind of red chaos, and if you've got Mael and you're cheating creatures into play, then it doesn't affect you as much. That may be something I need to put into the deck. I'm still in a work in progress on my Mael deck. So, now Nate, another card you have down here is See the Unwritten with Mael, and that's 4 and green. It's a sorcery. Reveal the top 8 cards of your library. You may put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield. Put the rest into your graveyard. Dun, dun, dun. And with Ferocious, if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, you can put 2 creature cards onto the battlefield instead of 1. That may be a card that I need to put in once I tune out a couple of the less effective green fatties. The reason that I did not put that see the Unwritten in right away was because I didn't think I had that much graveyard recursion. But there are a couple, like Moldgraf Monstrosity, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And, you know, that return creature cards, and that's brutal.
So Moldgraf Monstrosity is 4 and 3 green for a creature insect. With Trample, he's an 8/8, so not bad already. When Moldgraf Monstrosity dies, exile it, but then return 2 creature cards at random from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Yeah, that's
powerful. Very powerful.
Yeah. And so Mael wants to cheat big creatures out of the top of the deck. And this was a problem I ran into as well. Conceptually, what I do when I play Mael is I mulligan away all of the creatures, and all of the big creatures, that is, in the hopes of drawing some of the smaller support creatures and or the other support cards in the deck. But if you do get stuck with these big fatties in your hand, then you have the option of running Elvish Piper, which is just a touch expensive at $7, almost $7.50.
Ooh,
right,
he's
now.
He's gone up.
Yeah, she has.
Hey, the original artwork is a male, and I'm looking at the Urza's artwork here.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I've only seen the later artwork. And then Quicksilver Amulet, which also has fancy Urza artwork, if you want to look that one up. Oh, you got a lion on your first try.
That's a great bit of flavor text that refers back to Savannah Lion. That is Vorthos-y in the extreme.
Yeah, because you would want to pay 4 mana for a Savannah Lion. Which
yes, the
only
card.
Cost 1.
The card is taking the mick out of you. That's how good it is. Mugging you off, as they say.
But Quicksilver Amulet is great in a lot of different decks because for 4 mana, actually 8 mana on the first turn, but then 4 mana on subsequent turns, you can cast anything. You can put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. And then Scroll Rack, which I was fortunate enough to buy about a year ago. Scroll Rack is wonderful. For it costs 2 mana. But when it's an artifact, and for 1 and a tap, exile any number of cards from your hand face down. Put that many cards from the top of your library into your hand, then look at the exiled cards and put them on top of your library in any order. So if you've got a couple of big fatties, or even just 1 big fatty, you scroll rack it onto the top of your deck and you use Mael to pop it out. That's a great, great combination. Again, the emphasis when playing Mael is lots of creatures with power greater than 5 and casting cost 6 or greater. Anything that costs less than that in terms of casting cost, they should be utility cards or creatures that make your big fatties much more effective, like Xenagos, God of Revels, Eros, God of Victory.
Helios for the vigilance?
The vigilance isn't as important as delivering the killing blow. You could put Heliod in there, though there's very little harm in that. Again, though, it's got to replace a utility card, and so you better be giving something up that isn't as good as vigilance. You know what I mean? And that's kind of hard, because vigilance is not really super great. Plus, you know, if you're really feeling defensive, you just leave Mael alone until it's almost your turn. In the end step of your final opponent, you pop something out if nothing has. And if, of course, your opponent attacks in when you have an untapped Mael with 6 mana available, you just drop it during combat and see what comes up. You always have the choice of not blocking with it. Other cards, and these are, generally speaking, very pricey cards, right? Miri's Guile, Sensei's Divining Top, and my precious, precious Sylvan Library, which I have an Italian Legends version of, right? So anything that kind of messes with the top deck, cheaper solutions, especially since we've just come off a block that had this as a major theme, and now it's an evergreen effect or scry effects. And so Crystal Ball is a repeatable scry. All of the scry lands that are just rotating out of standard right now, they're, you know, it's just really effective to have a scry effect. And after you have 6 or 7 mana on the table, if you drop a scry effect and you don't see a creature on the top of your deck, a big fatty with Mael, then you just dump it, you ship it to the bottom of your deck.
So would you run Nova Blast Worm?
Nova Blast Worm?
Yeah. Nova Blast Worm.
Does it destroy all creatures when it comes in?
No, it destroys all creatures when it attacks. All other creatures, doesn't destroy itself. But if you've got like an Avacyn out, I've seen in this deck, Tooth and Nail put in Avacyn, Nova Blast Worm, and Bob's your uncle, as they say.
It's okay. I didn't end up running that because it does destroy all other creatures, and so it relies too heavily on having Avacyn out. And so your choice and or something else that gives indestructibility to your creatures. And so if this is one of the 5 cards when Mael reveals it, your choice is basically to whiff or drop the Nova Blast Worm and lose Mael.
Yeah, I suppose.
And that trade-off just didn't seem worth it to me. But, I mean, other fun cards that go, you know, in Mael are Angel of Serenity. Right, 4 and 3 white, 4 and white, 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 so really difficult to cast otherwise. But when she enters the battlefield, you can exile up to 3 other target creatures from the battlefield and or creature cards from graveyards. And when Angel of Serenity leaves the battlefield, return the exiled cards to their owner's hands. So you basically take one of your big fatties that's in a graveyard already, exile it, and take 2 of your opponent's creatures, or mix and match, right? And exile them, and then your opponent has to recast them at the very least, and brutal. And if it's your opponent's commander, your opponent really has a choice then. If you do that to Animar loses all of, not that I'm picking on Animar, Animar loses all of its counters, and then you still have to recast it. Your choice is you wait for Angel of Serenity to die or leave the battlefield, or just put it into the command zone and pay the commander tax next time. Of course, Archetype of Endurance, that's a blast because now all your stuff has hexproof, right? And lately, the Bane of Balaged, Q Bane. Right, a whole bunch of creatures. And really, an easy way to do this is to search for cards that have a converted mana cost of 7 or greater and power of 5 or greater. And those are your chief candidates. And you'll find that there are a whole bunch of really cool and weird cards. Blazing Archon. Whoever plays Blazing Archon, it's 6 and white, white, white. It's a flying Archon, 5/6, but creatures can't attack you. It's glorious. It's so much fun.
I've played that many times.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Yep. And then combo utility cards like Gisela, Inferno Titan, Gruul Rage Beast, which is a hidden gem. Whenever Gruul Rage Beast or another creature enters the battlefield, you may have it fight one of your opponents. And it goes on. I'm not going to spend a lot of time.
There's one card I doubt's on your list, Phil, because you appear to be blind to it, but probably should be in the deck. And that is Vorinclex, Voice of Hunger.
Yeah. I did consider Vorinclex because it's just so useful, but no. I can say it took almost a second to rule him out.
That's
tempting.
So you played Sigarda instead?
Sigarda, yes. In fact, I did replace Vorinclex with Sigarda. So, Spearbreaker Behemoth, the Thack Standby, that's in here, right? It's just...
Quick, one second. Stuff. Listener competition. If you could think of the top five nonsense reasons Phil could justify putting a Vorinclex into his deck and tweet them over to @CommanderAndMTG, I'll judge the best one. And then Phil can use it to put Vorinclex into decks. It could be Vorinclex was merely on vacation in Phyrexia and he was accidentally made into a Praetor, or Vorinclex is secretly an angel and is infiltrating Phyrexia to destroy it from inside out. Anything, really.
He's an informant.
But you go for it.
It's going to have to be an amazing, amazing explanation, because not only is he a Phyrexian Praetor, which one can overlook in certain circumstances, such as if one has a Judge Foil Elish Norn. It has the Phyrexian watermark, and there's just no way around that. Maybe if he's reprinted in a commander set. All right. So that, unless we have something else to add to these three, that's our second big mana episode, isn't it?
All right.
I believe so. Yeah. I think, last question to finalize it then. If you were sitting down at the table and you've got an opponent you don't know, which of these three would you fear the most for them to pull out of their deck box?
You want our listeners or you want us to answer
you, that? You guys. I'm asking you two.
Animar.
Nate?
I think Rakdos, because he's doing damage while he's doing Animar.
I think Animar, but the reason being, if it's someone I don't know, it's like at my LGS, new player, I would, as soon as I see Animar, presume they're just going to go infinite with him.
Right.
But fear for power level, if I know the player and I know it's not infinite, I'd probably go Rakdos, but only since BFZ came out. There you go. Battle for Zendikar having an impact on my Commander games already.
Rakdos was brutal even before Battle for Zendikar.
Yes. Yeah. He's not too shabby, as they say.
This week we have two messages of the week, don't we?
Oh yeah, we just found out that the French dual commander format has just banned Sensei's Divining Top.
Well, the writing was on the wall for that one for a while. I think in French, if you read forums and Reddits and stuff about French EDH, that was one a lot of people were speaking about for a long time.
Just too annoying.
People complain about it in every format, and you know what? I love my Sensei's Divining Top. It's no worse than Miri's Guile, and it's no worse than Sylvan Library.
No, it is worse. And I'll explain why it's worse. Not because of its power level and its effect on the game.
Because you can't get rid of it.
No, it's not even that. It's because your Sylvan Library and your Miri's Guile both happen once in your turn. Whereas, as I found out the other night, and bear in mind, I run Divining Top in one deck, so I can't complain too much. But if someone does it at every end step of every player's turn and takes 2 or 3 minutes making their mind up every time, that is a long amount of time, a large amount of time that feels really long added onto every game of Commander.
So if you have two or three players doing it,
oh my god.
Yeah. So you're saying that this player would spend one mana to look at the top three cards of his or her deck at the end of every player's turn?
It was a Grenzo deck, so they were shifting it and then shimming it down, seeing what come up. Quite rightly, not doing it immediately, waiting to see how the board changed in the next player's turn. And they had other cards out that was allowing them to filter cards that they were looking at back to the bottom of their library. And they're making their decisions quite rightly, because obviously people's turns change what's going on. And
yeah, the Grenzo was playing with their deck every turn.
Yeah, it's because it was in Grenzo. I know that you would only do it once a turn normally, unless someone shuffled your deck or you had to shuffle your deck, and then you might want a cheeky check. But when it's happening over and over again, and obviously that's a corner case scenario, but if you've got two of them on the table, so you've got two players, and maybe they're not doing it in sync with each other, so both doing it at the same time, one's waiting for the other one to finish topping before they top, It's so painful. It's like what Sheldon said when he was talking about tutors. There comes a point, if someone's tutoring over and over again, you're playing a game where three people are watching one person look for a deck of cards.
Yeah, I mean, that just seems like the person didn't understand that it happens at instant speed, and then whatever they're dumping into the bottom of the library also happens at instant speed. So if there is an immediate threat that they have to respond to with Grenzo, they can do all of that. But there's, I mean, it sounds egregious that they were just doing this at every turn. And if they're paying a mana for it.
For a reason. They weren't just doing it to look at the same three cards over and over again. So it wasn't egregious in that respect. It was just the time it was taking and the decision making. And there's no way in Magic, you can't say to someone, it's unfair and against the rules to say to someone, you're not allowed to spend time making your game decisions, because that's bullying someone into possibly making mistakes, etc. You know, it's the opposite of slow playing. So you can't do that. But there's a reason people nickname this card Dirtle Top. And it felt... Oh.
Well, I know from experience that you shouldn't do that, but I've also played with people we both know the names of who will gesture with their hand in order to speed somebody up and roll their eyes if you take too long.
Oh, I will take extra time if someone does that.
Yes. That was the response, actually.
And I'll do it every time on their turn.
And so the second message of the week is for those people who are playing these big mana decks, right? Well, the creature decks, at least.
Yeah, watch out for bribery. If you play any of these three creature-heavy commanders, it can be assumed that your deck is a treasure trove of bribery targets. So you might want Orbs of Warding or some other player-based self-hexproofing. Homeward Path!
Yep, Orbs of Warding, Witch's Eye? No, not
Witchbane Orb.
Witchbane Orb, that's it. Lots of orbs.
Or Mael can play Leyline of Sanctity.
That's right, Leyline of Sanctity and Aegis of the Gods. Wonderful utility creature, by the way, Aegis of the Gods. Underpriced, rather, for what it provides. So I always typically do our outro. Nate, do you want to do our outro this time?
We love our listeners. You're fun. You tell us what you think. And you even play test decks with us. Please take the time to contact us. And if you really like us, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It makes us feel better. And we can point to it and say, hey, look at that, to the people who care about such things. Our theme song was created for the podcast by me. Our logo was created for the podcast by MrPicto.co.uk with assistance from Kelly DeLuca. Special thanks to TechWiz's Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin for his server space. You can reach us by going to our website, CommanderAndMTG.com. Our email is cast@CommanderAndMTG.com. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, MTGcast.com, and Reddit, by searching for Commander in MTG Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Individually, on Twitter, I'm at Mr. Plorg.
I'm at Copain26.
And I'm at Ketjack. And I think that's our show.
And that's our show.
Anymore.